You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey family, this is King Caruso, the Black History Buff, and I need to leave you this message because I took a lot of time and care and energy to make this particular episode. And the finished product, unfortunately, because of some of the sound effects I used, because of certain elements I put in it, I can't put it out for listening on the regular digital platforms. So, if you want to hear the episode as I intended it to be heard originally, you can go over to my Patreon where it's completely free to listen to. However, I still put just as much time, care, and effort into this version that you're going to hear here. So please, kick back, relax, and enjoy the incredible story of Fela Kuti. Picture this, Lagos, Nigeria, 1977. A man walks onto the stage, saxophone in hand, but he's not there just to play music tonight. He's there to declare war. The song he's about to perform will get his home burned down, his mother beaten, and his life threatened. But Fela Anikolapo Kuti does not care, because tonight he's going to call Nigeria's military exactly what they are: zombies. This is King Caruso, and this is the Black History Buff podcast. Today, we're diving into the life of a man who turned music into a weapon, rhythm into rebellion, and a saxophone into a sword. This is the story of Fela Kuti. Before we begin, let me ask you something. When you think of protest music, what names come to mind? Bob Dylan, Nina Simone, Rage Against the Machine maybe? All legends, no doubt. But there's one name that should be on that list. A man who didn't just sing about revolution, a man who lived it, breathed it, and paid for it with his blood. Fela Anikolapo Kuti wasn't just Nigeria's most controversial musician. He was Africa's most dangerous artist at the time. And the government knew it. Born in 1938, Fela came from a family that didn't know how to stay quiet. His father was a reverend and educator, but it was his mother who shaped the revolutionary in him. Funmilaho Ransom Kuti was what we'd call a force of nature. A feminist before the word was popular in Africa. An anti-colonial activist when challenging the British could get you killed. She fought for women's rights, battled corrupt leaders, and never backed down from a fight. Sound familiar? If not, it will soon. Because the apple, as they say, doesn't fall far from the tree. But Fela's path to revolution started with something much simpler. Music lessons. It's London, 1958. And a 20-year-old Fela Ransom Kuti, not yet the Anikolapo he'd become, was supposed to be studying medicine. His parents had grand plans for their son to become a doctor, but Fela had other ideas. Instead of heading to medical school, he enrolled at Trinity College of Music. Can you imagine the phone call back home?
Mom, Dad, about medical school. I've decided to become a jazz musician instead.
London in the late 1950s was electric. The city was pulsating with American jazz, and Fela dove in headfirst. He formed his first band, Hula Lobotos, a fusion of West African highlife and American jazz that would become the blueprint for everything that followed. But here's what's fascinating. Even then, Fela was already questioning everything. Here he was, an African in the heart of the British Empire, watching his fellow Nigerians adopt English accents and English ways, and it bothered him deeply. You see, Fela was having an identity crisis, and identity crises for artists can be incredibly dangerous things. They force you to ask uncomfortable questions like, who am I? What do I represent? And who do I represent? And what am I going to do about it? For Fela, those questions would soon have very loud and very political answers. By the early 1960s, Fela was back in Nigeria. Independence had come in 1960, but the country was still finding its voice. And so was Fela. He reformed Hula Lobotos, blending those London jazz influences with traditional Yoruba rhythms. And the sound was getting closer to something new. Something distinctly African. But it wasn't quite there yet. That final piece of the puzzle would come from the most unlikely place. America. The land of jazz that had already influenced him so much was about to change his life again. But this time, it wasn't the music that would transform him. It was the politics. Los Angeles, 1969. Fela Kuti lands in America expecting to expand his musical horizons. But what he got instead was a complete rewiring of his brain. Enter Sandra Isidor, Black Panther, activist, revolutionary, and the woman who would change the course of African music forever. Sandra didn't open Fela's eyes, she ripped them wide open. She handed him books by Malcolm X, Angela Davis, Franz Fanon. She introduced him to the Black Power movement, to the idea that Black people worldwide were fighting the same battles against the same systems. Can you imagine that moment? Here's Fela, this Nigerian musician who's been struggling with questions of identity and authenticity. And suddenly, Sandra shows him that his struggle wasn't isolated. It's global. Fela would later say, "Sandra opened my eyes," but I think that's somewhat of an understatement. She didn't just open his eyes, she handed him a weapon. Knowledge. And when Fela returned to Nigeria later that year, he wasn't the same man who'd left. He was angry, focused, and he had something to say. The sound that emerged from that anger, that frustration, was unlike anything the world had ever heard. Take the complexity of jazz and the soul of traditional Yoruba rhythms, season it with some funk, and this is crucial, weaponize it with revolutionary politics. Afrobeat was born. But let's be clear about something. Afrobeat wasn't just Fela's creation. This was a collective force. Tony Allen on drums. And let me tell you, Tony Allen was the heartbeat of this movement. His polyrhythmic drumming was so complex, so hypnotic, that it could put you in a trance. Then you had the horn section. Imagine 10, 12 musicians blowing in perfect harmony, their sound cutting through the air like a battle cry. And the whole thing would just... it would just build and build and build. These weren't 3-minute pop songs. These were musical manifestos, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, sometimes longer. Because you can't explain revolution in a radio-friendly format. By the mid-70s, Afrobeat wasn't just a sound, it was a full-blown movement, and every song was a political statement. Zombie mocked Nigerian soldiers who followed orders without thinking. Shuffering and Shmilling attacked religious hypocrisy. These songs spoke directly to what Fela called sufferheads, ordinary Nigerians crushed under military rule and poverty. But here's what made Fela dangerous. He wasn't just singing about problems, he was calling people out by their name, calling out specific leaders, making it personal. They took it there and he took it further. And in a military dictatorship, taking it further can get you killed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lagos, Nigeria, mid-70s. While most musicians were content to perform and go home, Fela Kuti built himself a compound. It wasn't just a home. He called it the Calcutta Republic, and he declared it independent from Nigeria. Think about the audacity of that statement. Here's a musician essentially saying, "I don't recognize your government's authority over me or my people." Calcutta became a sanctuary. A place where artists, activists, and anyone fleeing government persecution could find refuge. It was part recording studio, part commune, and part fortress. And it drove the military government absolutely insane. Then came 1977, the year everything changed. Fela released Zombie, and it became an instant anthem. People were singing it in the streets, in bars, in their homes. Soldiers themselves were humming it, which, when you think about it, must have been humiliating for the military leadership. The song basically said, "You soldiers are mindless. You follow orders without thinking. You're not men, you're zombies." On February the 18th, 1977, over 1,000 soldiers surrounded Calcutta Republic. And what happened next was one of the most brutal raids in Nigerian history. They burned everything. The studio, the instruments, the recordings. They beat Fela unconscious. But the worst part, they threw his 77-year-old mother from a second-story window. She survived the fall, but the injuries would kill her a year later. Now, if we're honest, most people would have taken this as a sign to back down, to maybe find a quieter, a safer way to make music. But not Fela. On April 27th, 1978, he loaded his mother's coffin into a truck and drove it straight into the army barracks in Lagos and dumped it at the gate. His message was simple. "You killed her. Here's your responsibility." Can you imagine the balls that took? Walking up to the people who destroyed your life and literally delivering your dead mother to their doorstep. This wasn't grief. This was weaponized grief. This was making sure the world knew exactly who was responsible but the death of Nigeria's most prominent female activist. The image of Fela carrying that coffin became legendary. It showed a man who refused to be broken, even by the deepest personal loss. But the government wasn't done with him. Not by a long shot. After the Calcutta raid, something fundamental changed in Fela. It wasn't just his music that became more radical. It was his entire identity. He dropped the name Ransom, a colonial name imposed on his family by British missionaries. In its place, he took Anikolapo, which in Yoruba means he who carries death in his pouch. This wasn't simply a name change. This was a complete spiritual transformation. Fela rejected Christianity and Islam, calling them tools of colonial oppression. Instead, he embraced his traditional Yoruba religion. The Africa shrine became his temple, where music and spirituality merged into something that was part concert, part political rally, and part religious ceremony. But Fela's most controversial move came in 1978. A year after losing everything in the Calcutta raid, he married 27 women in a single ceremony. 27. In one day. The media went crazy. Critics called him a misogynist hiding behind African tradition. Supporters said he was protecting women who worked for him from public slander and government persecution. The truth, as usual with Fela, was complicated. Many of these women were his dancers, backup singers, and band members. In a conservative Nigerian society, working for Fela, especially living in his compound, marked these women as outcasts. The marriage ceremony was partly about giving them legal protection and societal respectability. But it was also vintage Fela. A massive middle finger to conventional society, a statement that said, I'll live by my own rules and not yours. And this is what made Fela so fascinating and so frustrating. He fought for African women's liberation while living as a polygamist. He championed the poor while living like a king. He preached traditional African values while embracing some aspects of Western culture. Fela contained multitudes, and those contradictions made him human. But they also made him vulnerable. And his enemies were paying attention to every contradiction, every weakness. The arrests kept coming. Over 200 times, Fela was dragged to jail. Sometimes for days, sometimes for months. The charges ranged from currency smuggling to marijuana possession to murder. Most were bogus. All were designed to break him. But you can't break a man who carries death in his pouch, because death holds no fear for him. In fact, he holds death. I want to talk numbers for a moment. Over 200 arrests, dozens of court cases, years of legal battles, and countless beatings. This was systematic persecution. The most serious charge came in 1984, currency smuggling, a charge that carried a sentence of 5 years in prison. At his trial, Fela claimed the money was planted on him. Given the government's track record, that's entirely believable. But here's what's remarkable. Even from prison, Fela remained defiant. He continued composing music in his head. He turned his trial into a performance, using the courtroom as another stage for his political theatre. Amnesty International designated him a prisoner of conscience. International musicians rallied to his cause. The pressure became too much for the Nigerian government. And after 18 months, they very quietly released him. But prison had taken its toll. Fela emerged thinner, more haggard. The constant stress, the beatings, the legal battles had worn him down. Then, in 1993, came the murder charge. This time, they accused him of killing an electrician. The case was eventually dropped, but it showed just how far the government was willing to go to silence him. By the mid-90s, Feller's health was failing. Years of persecution, combined with his own excesses, had left him vulnerable. But he refused Western medicine, relying instead on traditional healers and his own stubborn will. It wasn't enough. And on August 2nd, 1997, Feller Anikolapo Kute died of complications from AIDS. He was 58 years old. His brother, Olikoye Ransom Kute, Nigeria's Minister of Health at the time, made the decision to announce the cause of death publicly. In a country where HIV/AIDS carried a massive stigma, this could be interpreted as a powerful statement about honesty and public health, or it could be viewed as a condemnation of his lifestyle and a way to taint him in the eyes of the people. But even in death, Feller couldn't be contained. His funeral drew over 1 million people to the streets of Lagos. The entire city shut down. People danced, sang his songs, and celebrated a life that had burned so brightly it could still light up the darkness. Feller had become more than a man. He was now a symbol, a spirit, a voice that death itself could not silence. The New Africa Shrine, rebuilt by Feller's family, remains a pilgrimage site for music lovers and political activists. And every October, during Fellerbration, Lagos becomes a celebration of everything Feller represented. But Feller's real legacy lives in the global music that followed him. Hip-hop artists sample his rhythms, jazz musicians study his arrangements, electronic producers build entire tracks around the grooves of the bass lines that he produced. From Beyoncé to Kendrick Lamar to J. Cole, they all acknowledge the debt they owe to the man who weaponized African rhythm. There's a Broadway musical about his life, multiple documentaries, countless books, and academic courses on Afrobeat and African popular music. But here's what I find most powerful about Feller's legacy. It's not just the music. It's the idea that art can be resistant. That a single voice, armed with truth and conviction, can echo across generations. That music isn't just entertainment. When done differently, it can be a weapon against oppression. In a world where artists are often encouraged to just stick to the music and avoid politics, Feller's life reminds us that some voices are just too important to be silenced. He showed us that you can't separate the artist from the activist, that real art comes from real conviction, and that sometimes the most dangerous thing you can do is simply tell the truth. The man who carried death in his pouch is gone, but his spirit lives on every time someone uses their art to challenge power. Every time a musician speaks truth to authority, every time rhythm becomes rebellion. That's the immortal echo of Feller Anikolapo Kute, and it's still reverberating today. Feller once said, "Music is the weapon of the future." Looking at the world today, with artists from Nigeria to Compton using their platforms to challenge injustice, it was clear he was right. The revolution he started with a saxophone and a stubborn spirit continues, and perhaps is the greatest tribute we can offer to the Anibama Ida, the strange one who was bigger than life itself. You've been listening to King Carus from the Black History Buff podcast. And until next time, keep questioning, keep creating, keep making history, and please, stay blessed.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.